We are considering, in this lesson, Genesis chapter 32. Let us just summarize for a moment one or two things about the life of Jacob to refresh our memories as to where we are in the history of this remarkable man. We saw that the section of Jacob's life, which is recorded from Genesis chapter 31 to Genesis chapter 35, is the section over which we place the heading, Jacob's Directing and God's Guidance. We saw that Genesis chapter 31 is the commencement of his journey back to the home of Isaac his father. In Genesis chapter 32, we have conflict on the journey, and this takes us right to the 15th verse of chapter 33. We then saw that there is catastrophe on the journey. And lastly, when we turn over to Genesis chapter 35, we find that there is the climax of the journey. So, there is commencement, conflict, catastrophe, and climax. In dealing with Genesis chapter 32, we are dealing with the conflict on the journey. And we saw that we would divide this into three cycles of thought. Firstly, there is Jacob's strategy. Secondly, there is Jacob's supplication. And thirdly, there is Jacob's struggle. If we wanted to take this cycle of events into chapter 33, we would there say that we see Jacob's settlement. That is, his settlement with his brother Esau. So, let us bring these together. There is firstly his strategy, secondly his supplication, thirdly his struggle, and fourthly his settlement with his brother Esau. Now, as we have already read Genesis chapter 32, we will commence now our consideration of its contents. Let us look now at Jacob's strategy. Here he is, after 20 years, facing the day which he has feared over all the time that he was in the home of Laban. Now he must meet Esau. He well remembers the malice with which Esau considered him when he had stolen the blessing. He well remembered the determination of Esau to have him put to death. And over these years, this had weighed heavily upon him. But now the great day has come, when shortly he will meet Esau again. What reception will he get? How can he prepare the way? I suppose a simple lesson that we learn from that is that our past oftentimes comes back to meet us. Issues that we feel are dead and gone, sometimes we find we have to meet them again. And in this case, Jacob has to meet Esau. What then was his strategy for meeting Esau? I want you to look first of all at the revelation which he had. It is recorded that Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." So here we have him at the place called Mahanaim. That means two hosts or camps. Here we have a revelation given to Jacob of divine protection. When he called the place Mahanaim, two hosts, it indicates that the angels had joined Jacob's host and were conducting him on his way. So, right at the beginning, there is the revelation of divine protection and divine preservation. We must keep in mind that Jacob here is obeying the voice of God. He is returning as God has told him to return, and therefore, as the Lord had promised to care for Jacob, so here he sees the host that now surrounds him. Good it is when we remember that when we are walking in the ways directed by God, He will care for us, He will preserve us, and He will protect us. A good thing to keep in mind. So, there is first of all, for Jacob, divine protection. Am I speaking to someone who has determined to follow a pathway set out by God? Absolutely persuaded in your mind as to the route you should take, as to the journey of life you should travel, as to the direction on which you should now set. You're convinced of that, you're sure of that, and before God you have ascertained that this is His mind. And yet, there still is fear, there still is reluctance, there still is a holding back. Let us remember that when God directs us, God cares for us. When we are obedient, He casts His preserving grace about us. And so Jacob says, this is God's host. I want you to observe not only the revelation from God, but I want you to observe, secondly, please, the response from Jacob. What is his response? His response is to send messengers to Esau, and these messengers are told to say, "Thy servant Jacob said thus," etc. What is he doing? He is attempting a number of things. He is attempting, firstly, to placate Esau by the words, "Thy servant Jacob." He is acknowledging Esau now as my Lord Esau. So Jacob is seeking to carry the impression to Esau that he, Jacob, is the servant of Esau and that Esau is his master. This, of course, was the whole point at issue all these years before in the buying of the birthright and in the sad circumstances over the blessing from Isaac. And now Jacob is really saying, "Esau, I've changed, you know. I am now thy servant, Jacob, and you are my lord, Esau." But as well as that, it is the desire of Jacob to show Esau that he has become a man of some substance and wealth. "I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants." So here is Jacob saying to Esau, "Over these years, you know, God has blessed me, and I have become a man of substance and a man of wealth." So, there was, perhaps, just a hint that Jacob was trying to impress Esau, impress him with his wealth, impress him with his substance, and impress him with the fact that the Lord had obviously blessed him. Encouraged by God's host, he may have been, knowing that the meeting has to take place. Very subservient he is now. But is he not still trying to do God's work? Is he not still trying to placate Esau and to set things right? And his response, surely, was less than one would have expected under these circumstances, for fear is still in the heart of Jacob. So we have, firstly, revelation. We have, secondly, response from Jacob. We have, thirdly, reaction from Esau. It is strange, is it not, that there appears to be no reaction from Esau at all. The messengers return to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him." Obviously Esau had heard of the returning Jacob, and was now going out to meet him, so there is seemingly no response. Sometimes, in our dealings with God, we expect a response which does not come. Jacob obviously respected Esau in a sense. He certainly respected his power and his prowess in the field, and he respected the fact that Esau had expressed his desire to punish Jacob. But Jacob expected a response, and no response seems to be coming. No response seems to be in hand, and so Jacob is left still unaware of what is in the mind of Esau. Obviously, this was all in the hand of God. It was not yet time for God to reveal Esau's mind to Jacob. Remember that sometimes when we are left with uncertainty, sometimes when pursuing a pathway which we feel strongly was laid out by God, there are areas where we still feel uncertainty. The reason for that, at least one main reason for that, is that we might still be cast upon God. It is a strange thing that oftentimes as uncertainty goes, faith and trust goes with it. The more certain we are, the less we lean on God. And so Jacob here still has uncertainty. Seemingly no response. With this in mind, of course, Jacob then sets about scheming to arrange his family and his retainers in a way that he feels will please Esau best. But keep in mind that God is still in control. So this is his strategy. It is almost a dual strategy, which we have seen before, of listening to God, but seeking to prepare the way yourself. The dual linking together of God's power and Jacob's abilities. Jacob, greatly distressed, divides the people that was with him into two bands. If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. But God had said that he would be with him. And has he forgotten that the Lord's host is with him? Has he forgotten Mahanaim, two hosts? Can Esau overcome God's host? Do you see the point? This man is still listening to God, but depending on human power and ability. So that is his strategy, to divide the company. And we will see later he takes that even further. But to divide the company into two, while still listening to God. Now what about his supplication? This is the first recorded prayer of Jacob. Good that circumstances have at last driven him to pray. I know he had spoken to God in the past, certainly when Bethel was behind him. But here now is a prayer, a supplication. O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, the Lord which says unto me, return unto thy country. I am not worthy of the least of all thy mercies, etc. Here at last Jacob is driven to prayer. The crisis is now about to unfold. He has done all that he can and exhausted his own resources. He has tried by the use of his own ability. And now, with resources exhausted and the crisis about to break, Jacob prays. Let us seek to be men and women of prayer, not just as we face the imminence of crisis, but as we in daily life face living for God. So Jacob prays. I want you to look at the content of this prayer, and we will observe three things in its verses. Firstly, I want you to see that he speaks of the promises of God. The Lord which said unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. chapter 32, verse 9, is the chapter where Jacob speaks of the promises of God. He is now asking God to fulfill his promise. He is now asking God to fulfill what he has said he will do. He is almost, in a sense, bringing before God the fact that it is by Jacob's listening to the voice of God that he is now facing this crisis. Remember this, that following God is not always the easy way. Sometimes it leads us into crisis. Following God is not always the rosy pathway, the smooth way through. For Jacob, it has led him to the crisis of meeting Esau. And so he reminds God of his promises. Let us be like that. Let us follow the Lord, follow the Scriptures. And let us constantly remember and rely on his promises. He has promised so much. Go through your New Testament and note the promises of God. And there is nothing wrong and much right with coming into the presence of God and voicing these promises before him. So here we have Jacob reminding God almost, and I speak with reverence, for God never forgets, but reminding God almost of the promises which he had made. Let us build our life on reliance on his promises. Now, I want you to see secondly, please, that not only does he speak of the promises of God, but he speaks of the poverty of Jacob. We can see here that Jacob is making spiritual progress. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. So in verse 10 of chapter 32, he speaks of his own poverty. Jacob is changing. 20 years ago he thought differently. He thought he was worthy. 20 years ago he thought that he was the man. 20 years ago he thought that he deserved the promises of God. But now, I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies. Ah, Jacob, you're coming on now. May we in the school of God travel the same pathway and learn the same lessons, that we are not worthy. There is no one of us worthy of the great blessings that have come into our lives. And the moment we think we are worthy, we have fallen far short. I am not worthy of the least of all thy mercies. Jacob is saying, not only am I not worthy of thy mercies, but I am not worthy of any of thy mercies. Not worthy of the least of all the mercies, and of all the truth which thou hast shown unto thy servant. He was not even worthy of the revelation that God had given him. So care and revelation, Jacob says, I'm not worthy of it. I'm become two bands. Despite it all, I have divided my company. Despite it all, I still am relying on my own scheming. So Jacob acknowledges the poverty of his heart as well as the promises of God. But I want you to see a third thing. If he speaks of God's promises and his poverty, he speaks also of God's power. Verse 11. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he brings before God a plea for God's power to be seen. Deliver me from the hand of my brother. Jacob is learning that his own scheming will not do, and he needs God now to intervene. O Jacob has, as we have said, made progress. He is now praying and acknowledging that if deliverance comes, it must come from the hand of God. Now, that was the content of his prayer. But look at his behaviour after prayer. What's he doing? Read from verse 13. And all that we read there indicates that he is still scheming. Despite prayer, there is still an unease in his mind. So he takes over 500 head of cattle, divides them into three groups, and sends them on ahead to meet the advancing Esau. The night had passed when he had been praying, and now in the daylight he decides the stratagem to placate Esau. But the day wore on, and another night had to be gone through. He takes his family and crosses the ford Jabbok. And he desires solitude. He knows there is a crisis. He has prayed, and he has prepared. But still he is uneasy, and Jacob is left alone. Sometimes we order things so that we can be alone with God. Sometimes God ordered things so that we can be alone with him. Enough to remember that there are times where we must have lone dealings with God. Everyone who would live for God and serve God must at times have dealings alone in the presence of God. And so, now, after dealing with his strategy and with his supplication, we now deal with his struggle. We will look at three things. The prelude to the struggle, the progress of the struggle, and the product of the struggle. The prelude, the progress, and the product of the struggle. What was the prelude to the struggle? In a sense, we have already dealt with this, but let us just refresh our minds. Facing the crisis of tomorrow, because he knew that Esau was advancing, he would meet the three waves of gifts that had been sent by the three groups of his servants, hoping that Esau would be placated by what Jacob's servants gave Esau and by what Jacob's servants said to Esau. But still uneasy, still anxious, he's now alone with God. He is about to learn in the school of God that God will take circumstances and use them to make us and break us. And this momentous night in the life of Jacob will see a far greater work done than simply the placating of Esau. The prelude. Jacob was left alone, facing a crisis, alone with God. Look at the progress of the struggle. I want you to notice, please, firstly, the wrestling. It is recorded that they wrestled a man with him. Now, the word wrestle there has the thought behind it of the dust rising round about them as they wrestled together. I want you to note, please, that Jacob did not wrestle with the man, but the man wrestled with Jacob. And all night long it went on. And so back and forward the struggle took place. There wrestled a man with him. And Jacob is resisting all night as this man wrestles with him. Is that not an experience through which many of us have passed? God, as it were, taking dealings with us, and we struggling against these dealings, and so the struggle goes on, and on, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. A night-long struggle, when Jacob was exerting his will, his power, his energy, and his strength against the man. And so, the man took the initiative, and Jacob resisted. But I want you to notice, please, not only the wrestling, but I want you to observe the breaking of Jacob. This vital, essential turning point in the life of Jacob, the supplanter. When the breaking of the day came, and when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. Why is Jacob wrestling? Can I suggest at least one reason of which we should all be aware? He was wrestling, he was resisting, because he did not know if God's will suited him. So true of us, isn't it? Does God's will really suit us? Is it really what we want? Is it really what we desire? And so we wrestle because we do not know if God's will really suit us. And so, puny man struggles against God. Puny man resists God. And if we are resisting God's will today, it is simply puny man seeking to resist God. Now, I want you to observe that this struggle went on all night, not because the man wrestling with Jacob could not overcome Jacob. Not because of that. Because we will see that in a moment, with one simple action, he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh, and Jacob's thigh went out of joint. In other words, Jacob's ability to resist was ended just by the touch on the hollow of the thigh. But the struggle went on all night to teach Jacob the futility of his resistance, to teach Jacob the puny nature of his strength. And then suddenly, with one simple single action, the man just touched the hollow of his thigh. I tell you, it was the touch of God. It was. We will see that in a moment. And so the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint. Now, the man says, let me go, for the day breaketh. Let me go, for the day breaketh. Jacob, the struggling time is over. I've touched your thigh now. You're a broken man now, Jacob. Things have changed. That strength on which you relied for years is no longer able. Jacob, you're broken. I can go now. Let me go. Why was that statement made by the wrestling man? It was a test for Jacob. It was to test the response of Jacob now that his thigh had been put out of joint. And what was the response of Jacob? I will not let thee go except thou bless me. Ha! Jacob has now been brought to the point where he is clinging to the man for blessing. Clinging to him. Who was the wrestling man? Listen to Jacob further on. I have seen God face to face. He was wrestling with God. So what we have here is a Christophany, an Old Testament appearance of the Lord Jesus. It was the Lord Jesus who was wrestling with this man. And so at last, he's clinging to him for blessing. What is thy name? Oh, what emotions must have gone through Jacob's mind as that was asked. He's clinging for a blessing, and instead of being told, yes, the blessing is now yours, Jacob, what he hears is the question that must have stirred memories from years past. What is thy name? He would remember a tent, and the voice of his father, who art thou, my son? Away back from Genesis chapter 27, the words would come rolling over these 20 years. Who art thou, my son? And now the man asks him, what is thy name? When last asked the question, he had said, I am Esau, thy firstborn. When faced with the question now, he says, Jacob. I'm the thief, the supplanter, the man who told lies. I'm Jacob. And so Jacob, here tested, confesses to what he really was. 20 years ago, Isaac had been deceived, but God is not deceived. This old wrong still had to be settled, but in the presence of God, Jacob, the broken man, now confesses what he is, Jacob. Those who would be anything for God must first of all be broken by God. It is broken men and women who can serve him acceptably. Those who have learned that they cannot rely on themselves, cannot rely on the flesh, cannot rely on physical power or intellectual prowess, cannot rely on the material things which they possess, but broken in the presence of God, they have to come to know what it is to be at the end of their own resources and cast on him completely. This is Jacob now. Jacob's my name. And the man who had wrestled with him all night, not, as we have seen, because of lack of power, but to teach Jacob lessons, simply touched his thigh, and Jacob's thigh was out of joint. Oh, may we be touched by God in our lives, broken by God, so that we can acknowledge our need of him in service. And so we've seen the wrestling. And so we've seen the breaking, and so indeed we have seen the testing. And now let us look at the blessing. Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. Thou hast power with God and with men and hast prevailed. How did he prevail? Jacob prevailed with God by clinging in his helplessness for blessing. That's the action of a broken servant, clinging in helplessness and looking for blessing. You've now prevailed, Jacob. Your progress is now seen, and Jacob, you're prepared now to say, I won't let thee go unless thou bless me. And now Jacob has been given a new name. A new name denotes a new character. We can think, for instance, of other names that were changed in Genesis. Abram becomes Abraham. High Father becomes the father of multitudes. Sarai becomes Sarah. My princess becomes princess. Jacob becomes Israel. Supplanter, now a prince. So, a man broken by God is given a new name, a new dignity, a new standing, a new character. I want you to see, please, that Jacob asks another question. He asks the man, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. Now, the man does not respond to that. Indeed, we have to go to chapter 35, verse 11, before that question is answered. And in verse 11, God says to Jacob in chapter 35, I am God Almighty. At last God reveals his name, but not in Genesis 32. You see, the lesson is this, that there is always more to learn. All truth is not revealed at the one time, only as we are able to bear it. And in Genesis 32, for Jacob, enough has been revealed. He now has been blessed. He is now a broken man. He now has a new name. And this man now has to face tomorrow. So that is the prelude to the struggle and the progress of the struggle. What about the product of the struggle? Let us see that there were three things there, and one of them we have already mentioned, but must repeat it again. The first product was his new name, Israel, a prince with God. The only further thing I want to say about that is that God blesses sometimes those who seem the most unlikely individuals. Who would have guessed that the man who schemed and connived as much as Jacob would one day be Israel? God's ways are strange ways, and sometimes, as we have said, it is the most unlikely individuals who are raised up and blessed of God. Let us keep that in mind in the gospel, that sometimes it is the most unlikely individuals who are saved. And sometimes we look at people and consider that they never would be anything for God, but it is those individuals who are touched by the gospel and respond and raised up of God to become some of the choicest of his servants, who, having known the early John Newton, would ever have imagined him to become the man that he did, who, having known the hardened Pharisee, would have imagined that Saul of Tarsus would have become what he was. Indeed, God takes the most unlikely, and who would have thought that Jacob the supplanter would have become Israel, a prince with God? Never write folks off. As long as the gospel is preached and the grace of God can be known, remember there are those who can respond and the gospel can change them into the choicest of servants. So he had a new name. But I want you to notice, please, that in addition to that new name, he had a new walk. It is recorded that he halted and he limped. So this limping man has a new walk. In other words, everyone can see now that physically he's a broken man. Everyone can see now that physically he has changed. Can I suggest to you that that ought to be the product of our dealings with God? That everyone can see that our walk, that is our progress through life, is now different from what it used to be before. Of course, there ought to be immediate change when we hear the gospel and believe. But as time passes in the school of God, there must be further change, development of Christ-likeness. And so Jacob now, after struggling with God, openly displays the fruit of that struggle, a new walk. Let us ensure that our walk changes as we too are in the school of God. So, this man had a new name, and this man had a new walk. However, there is a third thing that we should see here. He had a new memory. Something he could remember. What was this new memory? This something that he could remember now in the days to come? It was the memory of a day, the memory of a night, when he saw God face to face. Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, which means the face of God. For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Observe, please, that the dealings of Jacob had been as close as that. Close, intimate, telling dealings with God. Alone with God. Wrestling with God. Broken by God. Blessed by God. And Jacob would forever remember that night. It would be etched indelibly on his memory, never to be erased. The night that the dust rose, and the wrestling took place, and Jacob resisted until the man broke him at the daybreak. Have we memories of dealings with God? Have we memories of days and nights when we wrestled with him? Have we memories of times when he broke us? When he changed us? Jacob-like, did we resist? Until he touched us? Took away our supports? Took away what we were relying on? Showed us the futility of resistance and the puny weakness of our strength? And was there a time that at last came when, bereft of everything and resources gone, we simply were clinging to him, saying, I will not let thee go unless thou bless me. My whole future is bound up in thee and thee alone. Thus it was with Jacob. Oh, that it might be thus with us! And when the sun rose, a new morning, a new start, a new day, a new beginning, a new stage of life, this changed man walked out to face the future. May we do likewise. This is the end of side B of this tape.